What happened to you, Safi? Ryder carried her down the deck to the cabin. Where are the others? Where are Rebecca and Amber and your father? She tried to stop herself blubbering at his questions and put her arms around his neck.
It's just too horrid to say, Ryder. Terrible things have happened. The very worst things ever.
He sat her on his bunk in the cabin. Her distress touched him, and he wanted to give her a few moments to recover. He handed her a dry but grubby towel. Very well, we'll get you tidied up first. Then you can tell me about it. He pulled a faded blue shirt off the clothesline above the bunk. Hang your dress up there. Put this shirt on when you're dry, and then come up to the bridge. We can talk up there. The tails of his shirt reached below her knees. It served well enough as a loose shift. She found one of Ryder's neckties in the drawer under the bunk and tied it around her waist as a belt. She used his tortoiseshell comb to tidy her damp hair, then twisted it into a single pigtail. A few minutes later, she went up to the bridge. Her eyes were pink and swollen with grief.
"They have killed my father," she said hopelessly, and ran to Ryder.
He caught her up and hugged her hard.
"It can't be true. Are you sure, Safi?" "I saw it. They cut off his head, just like they did to General Gordon. Then they took Rebecca and Amber away."
She fought back another sob.
"Oh, I hate them. Why are they so cruel?"
Ryder lifted her up and sat her on the combing of the engine room hatch. He kept one arm round her.
"Tell me everything, Safi. Every detail."
Jock McCrump heard her voice and came up from the boiler room. He and Ryder listened in silence to her account. By the time she had finished, the top rim of the sun was showing above the horizon, and the river mist was burning off. The city was slowly revealed in all its stark detail. Ryder counted 8 burning buildings, including the Belgian consulate. Thick smoke drifted across the river. Then he turned his telescope on the square silhouette of Mukran Fort. The flags had been pulled down, and the flagstaff was as bare as a gallows. Slowly he panned his lens across the rest of the city. Crowds of the faithful were dancing through the streets and crowding the corniche in their brightly patched jibbas. There were outbursts of gunfire, black powder smoke spurting into the air, salvos of feu de joie from the victors. Many were carrying bundles of loot. Others were rounding up the survivors of the attack. Ryder picked out small groups of women prisoners being herded towards the customs house. "What colour dress was Rebecca wearing?" he asked Saffron, without lowering the glass. He did not wish to look upon her anguish.
"Blue bodice with yellow skirts."
Although he stared until his eye ached, he could not pick out a blue and yellow dress or a head of golden hair among the captive women. But they were far off, and the smoke from the burning buildings and the dust from all the wild activity ashore confused the scene. "Where will they take the women, Bakshit?" he demanded.
"They will pen them up like heifers in the cattle market until first the Mahdi, then the Khalifa, and the emirs have time to look them over and take their pick."
"Rebecca and Amber," he asked, "what will happen to them?"
"With their yellow hair and white skin, they are a great prize," Bakshit answered. "They will certainly be selected by the Mahdi. They will go to him as prime concubines."
Ryder lowered the telescope. He felt sick. He thought of Rebecca, whom he loved and had hoped to make his wife, reduced to a plaything of that murderous fanatic. The thought was too painful to bear, and he forced it to the back of his mind. Instead, he thought of sweet little Amber, whom he had nursed and saved from cholera. He had a vivid image of her pale, childish body, the same body he had massaged back to life, being mounted and violated, sweet flesh torn and alien seed flooding her immature loins. He felt vomit rising to the back of his throat.
"Take us in closer to the shore," he ordered Bakshit. "I must see where they are so I can plan a rescue."
"Only Allah can save them now," said Bakshit softly.
Saffron overheard, and fresh tears oozed down her cheeks.
"Damn you, Bakshit, do as I say,"
Ryder snarled. Bakshit turned across the current and they eased in towards the city waterfront. At first they attracted little attention from the shore. The dervish were too preoccupied with the sack of the city. An occasional shot was fired in their direction, but that was all. They steamed downstream as far as the confluence of the two great rivers, then turned back, cruising in close to the Khartoum waterfront. Suddenly there was the boom of a cannon shot, and a Krupp's shell burst the surface ahead of the bows. The spray flew back across the deck. Ryder saw the gun smoke on the harbour wall. The dervish had turned the captured guns on them. Another Krupp's in the redoubt below the Maidan came into action, and the shell screeched over the bridge and burst in the middle of the river. "We're not going to do much good here, except giving them artillery practice," Ryder glanced at Bakshit. "Turn back into midstream and head on upriver. We'll find a quiet place to anchor until we can gather more news and find out what they've done with Rebecca and Amber. Then I can plan more sensibly for their rescue." For miles up the Blue Nile, both banks were deserted. Ryder headed for the lagoon of the Little Fish, in which he had transshipped the cargo of Dara from Ras Hailu's dhow. When he reached it, he anchored in a stand of papyrus, which hid the ibis from curious eyes on the shore. As soon as they had made everything on board shipshape, he called Bakshit to the engine room where they could talk without being overheard by the rest of the crew. He wasted no time, but put it to Bakshit straight and unadorned. "Do you think you would be able to go back among the dervish and discover what has become of Al-Yamal and Al-Zara without arousing the suspicions of the Ansar?" Bakshit pursed his lips and puffed out his cheeks, which made him look like a ground squirrel. "I am as they are. Why should they suspect me?" "Are you willing to do it?" "I am not a coward, but neither am I a rash man. Why should I be willing to do something as stupid as that? No, Al-Sakawi, I would not be willing. I would be extremely reluctant." He tugged unhappily at his beard. "I will leave at once." "Good," Ryder said. "I will wait for you here, unless I am discovered, in which case I will wait for you at the confluence of the Sawad River. You will go into the city and, if necessary, cross to Omdurman. When you have news for me, you will return to give it to me here." Bakshit sighed theatrically and went to his own tiny berth in the forecastle. When he emerged, he was dressed in a dervish jibba. Ryder refrained from asking him where he had obtained it. Bakshit dropped over the side of the ibis and waded to dry ground. He set off along the bank towards Khartoum.